So you sent us this massive stack of documents today because you know that deeply unsettling feeling. Like you go looking for a specific childhood memory,
Oh, yeah, like an old family photograph.
right? Or, maybe a favorite paperback you used to read all the time.
Yeah.
And you go to look for it and you realize it's just gone.
Just completely vanished.
Exactly. It was, I don't know, lost in a move or maybe damaged by a leaky roof. Or thrown out by accident, and you get that sudden, like, sinking realization that a piece of your personal history has literally just evaporated.
It's the finality of that moment, I think, that really stings the most.
Yeah.
Because you can't just go to a store and buy back your personal connection to a physical object, you know? The object itself was what anchored the memory.
Totally. And for a long time, I mean, we all kind of bought into this promise that the digital age was going to solve that exact problem.
We really did. We thought it was the ultimate backup plan.
Right. We told ourselves that once a game or a movie or an album was on a hard drive or, backed up in the cloud, it was safe forever.
But if you've been paying attention to the digital media landscape lately, you know that promise is largely an illusion.
It's a total illusion. We are watching digital storefronts close their doors, licensing agreements expire.
Servers shutting down left and right.
Exactly. Media that you actually paid good money for is just evaporating into the digital ether.
Yeah, we are living through an era of aggressive digital decay right now.
Digital decay, that's a great way to put it.
And sometimes it is forced obsolescence by design, right? Like meant to push you toward the newest product. But sometimes it is just corporate neglect because maintaining legacy servers just doesn't boost the current quarter's profit
This
margins.
is incredibly frustrating.
Right. But the end result for you, the consumer, is exactly the same. You lose access to the things you own.
Which is why today's deep dive into this August 2026 leak is so critical. We're looking at a really comprehensive teardown from Tekken Game.
It's a massive teardown.
It really is. They're analyzing a leaked internal Microsoft memo regarding the next generation Xbox console, the one internally codenamed Project Helix.
Right, Project Helix.
And our mission today is to figure out how this specific piece of hardware is attempting to completely rewrite the rules of digital ownership. And, media preservation in general.
Yeah, and looking at the sheer scale of the Tekken game teardown, what stands out immediately is that Xbox leadership.
Specifically, Sarah Bond and Phil Spencer.
Right, Bond and Spencer. They are not treating this as a standard hardware bump.
So it's not just like a minor upgrade.
No, not at all. They aren't just selling you a box with, slightly faster loading screens and a few more pixels. They are positioning Project Helix as a 25-year time machine.
A 25-year time machine.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. The core premise laid out in this internal memo is 100% native backward compatibility across every single Xbox generation since 2001.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to actually pull off a 25-year time machine, you can't just slap a new label on a plastic box and call it a day.
No, definitely
They
not.
have to completely rethink the hardware philosophy from the ground up, just to address that anxiety of digital loss we just talked about.
Exactly. The engineering philosophy here is entirely focused on stopping the forced repurchase cycle.
Which the industry loves.
Oh, they love it. For decades, the tech industry has basically relied on making you rebuy your software investments every, what, 5 to 7 years?
Yeah, whenever a new console generation launches, basically.
Right. But Project Helix is designed to natively support software from the original Xbox from 2001, the Xbox 360 from 2005, the Xbox One from 2013, and the Series X and S from 2020.
That is wild. That represents a quarter century of software architecture all running on one single machine.
On one machine. Yeah.
And I noticed in the memo, they aren't just talking about the game code itself either.
Right. It goes deeper than that.
Yeah, they are fully retaining historical cloud saves and achievement records dating all the way back to the very beginning of Xbox Live.
The entire ecosystem of your player history comes with you. They are preserving the context of how you played, not just, what you played.
It's kind of like, okay, imagine finding a mixtape cassette from 2001.
Okay, I'm with you.
But when you put it into a modern, high-end audio player, the machine natively separates the tracks, removes the background hiss, and outputs lossless spatial audio, and it remembers exactly where you paused the tape 25 years ago.
What's fascinating here is that native execution is the key differentiator.
How so?
Well, historically, backward compatibility has been heavily fragmented. Like, think back to the Xbox 360.
Oh, right. It only played some original Xbox games.
Exactly. It used partial per-game software emulation to run those original Xbox titles. It essentially had to, like, translate the old code into new code on the fly.
Which only worked for a very specific list of games, right?
Right. And then later, the Xbox One relied on custom virtual machine containers.
Basically building a fenced-off digital environment to trick the game into thinking it was running on older hardware.
Exactly.
But those always felt like, I don't know, digital band-aids. Like workarounds that required an army of engineers testing games one by one just to ensure they didn't crash.
Right, but Helix discards the band-aids. It relies on native silicon architecture combined with highly advanced hypervisor virtualization.
Hypervisor virtualization.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds intense. What does that actually mean?
So the hypervisor is a specialized software layer that sits beneath the operating system. It essentially partitions the hardware's resources.
Okay.
Allowing an older game to talk directly to the new GPU and CPU without needing a translation layer slowing everything down. They are building the capacity to understand these older games directly into the physical chips themselves.
Wow. So from a business perspective, that is a fiercely aggressive play for long-term brand loyalty.
Oh, absolutely.
Because by protecting a user's 25-year investment seamlessly, Microsoft makes it incredibly difficult for that user to ever justify leaving the ecosystem.
Why would you leave if everything you've ever bought just works perfectly?
Right. But that structural shift makes sense for digital files. It raises a massive logistical problem for physical media, though.
Oh, you mean the discs?
Yeah, the discs. The industry is rapidly moving away from optical drives. If this new console is designed to natively play 25 years of games, how do you interface decades-old physical plastic discs with a modern digital-first hardware ecosystem?
So Microsoft's leaked memo introduces a solution they're calling the disk-to-digital conversion protocol.
Disk-to-digital, okay.
Yeah, which basically acts as a permanent bridge between those physical artifacts and cloud licensing.
Wait, so if I have a legacy optical disk, say, an original copy of Halo from 2001.
A classic.
Right, complete with scratched plastic and a missing manual.
Mm-hmm.
How does the hardware actually convert that into a modern digital entitlement?
Well, you insert that physical media into an authorized optical drive or a verified retail kiosk at a participating store.
A kiosk? That's interesting.
Yeah. And the system doesn't just read the software on the disk. It executes a cryptographic hashing process to verify the physical object itself, attaching a permanent digital entitlement directly to your Microsoft account.
So it's hardware-level tokenization.
Exactly.
But does that mean the console is literally reading the, like, microscopic manufacturing quirks of my specific plastic disk to create a one-of-a-kind fingerprint?
That is exactly what it's doing.
Because my immediate thought was the ultimate loophole, right? Like, I authenticate my game, get my digital license, and then hand the disk to 100 different friends so they can all claim the exact same game for free.
And that loophole is exactly what cryptographic hashing prevents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because every manufactured optical disc has microscopic, completely unique physical variances in the polycarbonate and reflective aluminum layers.
So they're all technically a little different.
Right. They're essentially manufacturing defects so small the human eye can't even see them, but a laser can read them.
That is crazy.
So the hardware scans those microscopic variances, creates a unique cryptographic token for that exact piece of plastic, and registers it to your account on the server side.
So if my friend tries to insert the same disk,
the server checks the token, sees it's already claimed by you, and denies the digital license.
Wow. It turns physical disks from fragile pieces of plastic into literal passports to a digital library.
It really does. And the economic ripple effect of this specific mechanism is going to heavily disrupt the secondary market.
I can imagine. Collectors are going to go crazy.
Oh, they're going to drive up valuations immensely. Because these old discs are no longer just retro novelties, you know? They are highly valuable, single-use authentication tokens for a next-generation platform.
So a $5 thrift store game from 2005 suddenly transforms into a permanent digital asset.
Exactly. And you never require an optical drive again after that initial scan.
Okay. But the part of the teardown that actually caught me off guard wasn't the tokenization. It was the AI integration.
Oh, the AI is wild.
Because let's say I authenticate my token, claim my digital license, and boot up a game from 2001. a game built for a heavy CRT television, should look like a blurry, pixelated mess on a modern 4K OLED screen.
It usually does, yeah.
But the memo details dedicated AI neural processing units, or NPUs, specifically highlighting a 60 TOPS machine learning accelerator.
Right. And we know that 60 trillion operations per second is just a massive amount of compute dedicated purely to machine learning.
Definitely.
But how it intercepts the rendering pipeline is what makes it revolutionary.
How so?
Well, Microsoft has developed proprietary algorithms that operate entirely at the system level.
Meaning they don't need the original developers to release a patch.
Exactly. They don't need anyone to rewrite any code. The AI injects real-time enhancements directly into the game's output as you play it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I understand basic upscaling, right? Where a TV tries to guess what the missing pixels should look like.
Sure, most modern TVs do that.
But they are talking about system-level spatial audio injection and auto HDR. How does the architecture intercept a 20-year-old rendering pipeline and just repaint it on the fly without completely destroying the original art style?
That's the magic of it. Traditional upscaling just stretches an image and tries to smooth the jagged edges, right?
Right.
But the NPU in Project Helix uses a neural network trained on massive data sets of gaming textures and geometry.
Okay.
So as the old game engine generates a frame, the NPU analyzes the geometry and the lighting data before it ever even hits your screen.
Wait, before it hits the screen?
Yes. So it recognizes, for instance, that a flat, blurry, gray polygon is supposed to be a cobblestone street.
Oh, wow.
And in milliseconds, it swaps that low-resolution texture with a high-resolution AI-generated asset that actually matches the original art direction.
That is unbelievable.
And it does all this while simultaneously applying modern HDR lighting algorithms to the existing light sources in the game's original code.
So it's essentially acting as a middleman between the game engine and the display, just remastering the environment 60 times a second.
Literally remastering it as you play.
The performance leaps detailed in the memo are just staggering. Like, an original Xbox game running at a blurry 480i resolution jumps to pristine 4K at a locked 60 frames per second.
And it gets better for later games.
Yeah. Xbox 360 games from 2005 hit native 4K at 120 frames per second with a wide color gamut.
This approach grounds the abstract concept of AI into a highly practical, consumer-friendly reality.
It really does.
The system-level pipeline revitalizes archival titles to match contemporary visual standards. It effectively acts as an automated preservationist.
An automated preservationist. I love that term.
Yeah, it ensures these older pieces of digital art aren't just preserved as unplayable museum pieces, you know? They actually feel like modern releases.
Right. But okay, we've got this AI magically repainting frames in real time. But AI doesn't run on thin air.
Definitely not.
It creates a massive data bottleneck. Pushing that much data in milliseconds without melting the plastic casing requires serious silicon.
Oh, the hardware muscle required to eliminate that bottleneck is immense.
What are the specs looking like?
So Project Helix utilizes custom AMD Zen 6 processors with 16 cores.
16 cores.
An RDNA 5 GPU pushing 32 teraflops of native compute performance and 32 gigabytes of GDDR7 memory boasting 1.2 terabytes per second of bandwidth.
Oh, Lord.
I know, right? They're also utilizing PCIe Gen 5 solid-state storage.
To put those specs in perspective for you, the listener, the system needs to pull gigabytes of high-resolution AI textures from the storage drive and push them through the NPU in a fraction of a second, just to paint over a 20-year-old game without you noticing a single dropped frame.
Exactly. That PCIe Gen 5 storage drive and the massive GDDR7 memory bandwidth are the literal pipelines making the illusion possible.
And it comes with an estimated MSRP of around $600 to $700.
Which is pretty reasonable considering the tech. But the raw power is impressive, sure. The real story, though, is the architectural continuity that makes this power usable.
What do you mean by architectural continuity?
So Microsoft has been building on the x86 instruction set for over two decades now.
Oh, right.
This continuous architectural language is precisely why Sony's PlayStation 6 roadmap is facing severe structural challenges regarding backward compatibility.
Yeah, Sony's history of radical processor shifts is infamous. Particularly the PlayStation 3 and its cell architecture.
Oh, the cell architecture.
I remember developers complaining for years about how alien it was to code for that machine.
It was a nightmare for them.
Yeah.
The cell processor was an asymmetric beast. It had one main core and several synergistic processing elements, or SPEs, designed to handle highly specific parallel tasks.
Okay, and modern chips don't work like that.
No, modern PC like x86 Silicon, which powers both the current Xbox and PlayStation consoles, is a generalist instruction set.
I see.
So trying to emulate those highly specialized SPEs on a modern x86 CPU requires translating parallel tasks into sequential ones. It creates a massive computational overhead.
It's basically like taking a team of 8 specialized chefs who each speak a completely different dialect.
Huh, yeah, exactly.
And then trying to force one general manager to translate all their instructions sequentially while cooking a 5-star meal. The kitchen just backs up.
That is a perfect analogy. The kitchen completely backs up. Emulating the cell architecture takes brute force computing power that even modern chips just struggle with.
Right.
But Microsoft, on the other hand, has essentially been speaking the exact same architectural language since 2001. They're just adding a larger vocabulary through their investments in hypervisor technology.
We connect this to the bigger picture.
Oh, wait. I was going to say, if we connect this to the bigger picture, Microsoft actually sacrificed short-term gains in the past to maintain the structural foundation.
Right. During the Xbox One era, didn't their insistence on reserving system resources for virtualization and multitasking hurt their raw gaming performance?
It absolutely did. It hurt them a lot compared to the PlayStation 4. They took a lot of heat for it at the time.
I remember that.
But they laid the groundwork over a decade ago, and now they are reaping the benefits.
Playing the long game.
Exactly. It puts immense competitive pressure on Sony, because players with extensive digital libraries will naturally gravitate toward the platform that guarantees their investment won't be trapped on aging hardware.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
But let's look at the business reality behind this, you know, utopian vision for game preservation. Microsoft is a corporation.
Very much so.
And this level of engineering requires a massive financial return. How does this ecosystem directly benefit their bottom line?
The financial upside for Microsoft becomes really obvious when you look at Xbox Game Pass.
Oh, right. The subscription service.
Yeah. Universal native backward compatibility dramatically boosts the intrinsic value of their subscription service.
Because they can just dump the entire back catalog on there.
Basically, yeah. Microsoft will be able to integrate hundreds of rare legacy titles games that have been out of print for decades seamlessly into their catalog.
Wow.
They are weaponizing nostalgia, making Game Pass an absolute necessity for anyone who cares about gaming history.
Come for the latest releases, stay for the entire history of the medium.
Exactly.
But, you know, the Tekken game teardown included a con-ass list.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look at the hidden catches that could derail this beautifully painted picture.
There are definitely some catches.
The first hurdle is storage.
Yes. The SSD demands are going to be astronomical.
Why is that?
Well, when you download a 20-year-old game from the cloud, you aren't just downloading the original 2 GB file anymore.
Oh, because of the AI enhancements.
Right. You are downloading the massive, enhanced, high-resolution AI asset packs required for those 4K texture swaps we talked about earlier.
That makes sense.
And that will eat up expensive Gen 5 SSD space incredibly fast.
SSDs are not cheap.
No, they aren't. And furthermore, Tekken notes a significant hardware uncertainty. It's unclear whether the base $600 model of Project Helix will even include a physical optical drive.
Wait, really? So how do you do the disk-to-digital thing?
You might be forced to buy an expensive external drive, or haul your entire binder of games to a retail kiosk to authenticate your disks.
Yeah, hauling my fragile disks to a kiosk at the mall definitely kills some of the living room magic.
It's not ideal for sure.
But the biggest hurdle mentioned in the teardown was legal.
This is the messy part.
Right. Like, what happens when I authenticate my disk, claim my license, and boot up a perfectly upscaled 120 frames per second version of a 2005 street racing game, only to discover the iconic licensed soundtrack is completely missing?
This raises an important question, right? This is the hard limit of hardware preservation colliding with intellectual property law.
IP law ruins everything.
It really complicates things. When a publisher released a game in 2005, they only licensed the music, the real-world car models, or the branded clothing for a finite period.
Usually, what, 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, usually 5 to 10 years. They never envisioned a scenario where the software would be digitally reissued a quarter century later on an automated cloud system.
So the hardware can flawlessly preserve the game code, but it can't magically renew a copyright contract from 2 decades ago.
Exactly. Meaning some of these newly preserved titles will be legally compromised.
That is so disappointing.
It is. You might get the game running perfectly, but the recognizable music is completely stripped out and replaced with generic synthesizer tracks.
Or licensed vehicles are swapped out for unbranded boxes, I imagine.
Yep. Technology can solve the complex engineering bottlenecks, but it cannot solve the legal ones.
That is a stark reality check.
Yeah.
But honestly, even with those legal caveats, pulling all the threads together from this Tekken game leak reveals a monumental shift in strategy.
It is a huge shift.
Project Helix isn't just a new console boasting faster load times and higher resolutions. It is a literal manifesto on digital software longevity.
A manifesto, yeah. I like that.
By bridging physical media with permanent digital cloud rights through cryptographic tokenization and utilizing dedicated AI pipelines to bring archival experiences up to modern visual standards, Microsoft is setting an entirely new benchmark for how the industry must treat consumer investments.
They are establishing a paradigm where hardware generational upgrades should never invalidate a player's library or their memories.
Exactly.
It is a vital step forward for the preservation of interactive media in an increasingly volatile digital landscape.
Well, it leads you with a truly fascinating broader implication to ponder as we wrap up today.
Oh, absolutely.
If this cryptographic disk-to-digital tokenization actually works securely for video games at a global scale,
right,
could this exact protocol become the universal standard to save the broader film, television, and music industries?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. Imagine taking an old DVD or an audio CD you found at a thrift store, scanning the microscopic manufacturing variances at a local kiosk, and instantly gaining a permanent 8K digital cloud license for that movie or album.
They could change everything.
Could video game hardware actually serve as the Trojan horse that ends up saving all forms of physical media from fading into the digital ether?
It's definitely possible.
Because ultimately, whether it is a childhood game, a classic film, or an old album, we all just want the reassurance that when we go looking for a memory, it's still going to be exactly where we left it.